Studium und Praxis in einem? Das geht mit einem dualen Studium bei Mainova. Bei uns lernst du an coolen Partnerhochschulen und arbeitest an zukunftsweisenden Projekten der Energieversorgung mit. Danach kannst du gleich loslegen, mit einem Bachelor in der Tasche und Praxiserfahrung, auf die du bauen kannst. Starte voller Energie in deine berufliche Zukunft. Bewirb dich jetzt unter mainova.de/karriere. Mainova, da steckt mehr dahinter.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Katie Sorensen? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. In 2020, a woman named Kathleen Ann Sorensen lived in Sonoma, California. She went by the name Katie. She had studied early childhood and special education at Brigham Young University. She met a man named David Sorensen. The couple married and they moved to California. Katie had two children, a four-year-old son and a one-year-old daughter. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On December 7, 2020, Katie called the Petaluma Police Department to report an alleged incident. Here is what Katie told the police. Katie was at a Michael's store in Petaluma, California, along with her two children, when she overheard a Hispanic couple talking in the store. Katie claimed that the couple was on the phone making comments describing her children's characteristics, like saying blonde hair, blue eyes, boy, girl. As Katie moved throughout the store, the couple followed her down every aisle and stood in line right behind her. Katie exited the store and noticed the couple following her. She then mentioned something about a large white van, which was driven by a separate male. As Katie buckled her daughter into the vehicle, her son was in the stroller outside the vehicle. Katie claimed that the couple walked in circles around her vehicle and approached the stroller. Katie was too scared to talk to the couple. She called out to a woman standing behind the couple and said, "Excuse me, ma'am, could you help me?" as if Katie wanted assistance lifting her stroller into her vehicle. The driver of the white van exited his vehicle and made eye contact with Katie as the couple approached her. So Katie claimed that three people were closing in on her. The woman that Katie called out to for help also approached, which caused the couple and the van driver to flee. Katie described the couple as kind of rough-looking. She said the van driver had white or blonde hair, the woman in the couple had reddish hair, and the man in the couple was wearing a black hooded sweatshirt featuring the words Black Lives Matter. Katie implied that these individuals were about to kidnap her children. She told the police that she wasn't interested in pressing charges, rather she just wanted to make people aware so this doesn't happen to somebody else. On December 13, 2020, 6 days after Katie called the police, she posted two videos on Instagram that were recorded in her vehicle. In the videos, Katie referenced the alleged attempted kidnapping. She said she wasn't ready to talk about it, but felt compelled to in order to raise awareness as to what signs to look for. She wanted to encourage people to be more aware of their surroundings. She then briefly described the alleged attempted kidnapping by suggesting that the Hispanic couple repeatedly took steps toward and steps away from her son's stroller, like they were moving back and forth. Katie made a motion with her right hand as if to demonstrate someone trying to grab the stroller. This allegation about someone grabbing the stroller was new information that she had not revealed to the police. Katie described the couple as not being clean cut. On December 14, Katie was interviewed by a reporter on KTVU Fox 2 in San Francisco. Katie made it seem as though the couple was trying to build up the courage to grab her son. This is why they were allegedly taking steps toward and away from the stroller. Katie also spoke to the police on the same day and stood behind her story. By this point, the police had identified the Hispanic couple as Sadie Vega Martinez and Eddie Martinez. They showed a photograph of the couple to Katie, She looked at the image and said, "I'm 100% sure that's them." Katie was warned by the police that the photograph of the couple would be made public. They asked Katie if she was positive that they reached for the stroller and that she believed they were trying to kidnap her children. Katie indicated that she was 100% certain. The police found this curious because, as I mentioned, Katie failed to report the stroller grabbing part in her original statement to the police. The police obtained video surveillance that covered the parking lot where the incident allegedly occurred and realized that Katie's story was not accurate. Sadie and Eddie Martinez never approached Katie in the parking lot. They were completely innocent. It was clear that Katie had falsely accused them. When confronted with her deception, Katie told the police that she was not trying to have anyone arrested. She never wanted to go to court with this because she knew it wasn't viable. She tried to recall everything as accurately as she could. The inconsistencies in her story may have been caused by trauma. Katie said, quote, "What I saw and felt was very real to me, and that's why I shared it," unquote. After being shown the surveillance video, Katie tried to change her story and suggested that maybe she was wrong about who tried to kidnap her children. She admitted that Sadie and Eddie Martinez were innocent, but maintained that there must have been some other unidentified perpetrators. The problem for Katie is that no one engaged in the activities she reported to the police. No one approached her. No one offered her assistance with her stroller. Katie's story about the attempted kidnapping was 100% untrue. Nothing happened to her in the store or in the parking lot. Katie was charged with 3 misdemeanor counts of making a false report of a crime. The first count was for her statement to the police dispatcher on December 7. The second count was based on what she said to a police officer on December 7. And the third count was for her statement to a police detective on December 14. In April of 2023, Katie Sorensen was found not guilty of the first 2 counts connected to December 7 and guilty on the 1 count connected to December 14. At the time making this video, Katie has not been sentenced. The maximum penalty for this misdemeanor is 6 months in jail. Now moving to my analysis. There is no question that Katie's story was false. The question in this case is really about what constitutes a false report of a crime. Katie's defense argued that she was under stress due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Clearly, the jury didn't buy the entire case against Katie because they found her not guilty of 2 out of the 3 charges. This brings me to the question, was Katie Sorensen actually guilty of making a false report of a crime? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that Katie was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Video surveillance indicated that Sadie and Eddie Martinez never came in contact with Katie Sorensen. In fact, no one came in contact with Katie in the Michael's parking lot. There was never a crime. Katie contacted the police and described an incident that did not happen. When she spoke to the media and posted on Instagram, Katie's story expanded from a couple who followed her to a couple who tried to grab her son's stroller. When Katie spoke to the police again, she told them that she was 100% certain that Sadie and Eddie Martinez tried to grab the stroller. She even went so far as to say she would testify against the couple. After being caught in her deception, Katie admitted that the couple did not do anything wrong. Katie had a recent history of trying to build up a social media presence. Her Instagram posts resulted in her gaining thousands of followers. This makes it seem like she fabricated the story for financial gain and popularity. Moving to the exculpatory factors, the actions that Katie described to the dispatcher and to the police officer on December 7 were not criminal. She didn't mention anyone trying to grab a stroller at that point. She falsely reported that a couple followed her, but did not falsely report a crime. Furthermore, she made it clear that she did not want anyone arrested. As far as her statement on December 14, Katie's social media accounts indicated that she was obsessed with QAnon conspiracy theories, especially those that dealt with kidnappings. Perhaps Katie came to believe that people were targeting her children. She thought that danger was lurking everywhere she went. Maybe she became paranoid. In order to be guilty of falsely reporting a crime, Katie would have had to know that the report was false. Maybe she believed that the incident actually happened. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Katie was guilty? I agree with the jury in this case. I believe that Katie was not guilty of the two counts based on her activity on December 7, but she was guilty of making a false report of a crime on December 14. Katie really ran into a problem when she said that she was 100% certain and that she would testify against the couple. If Katie had simply backed away from her story on December 14 and said that she really didn't know what happened, she probably would have been in good shape. Katie pushed her fabricated story too far and put an innocent couple in danger of being prosecuted. Katie had every opportunity to tell the truth, and she chose not to. It's one thing to make up a story about being a victim. Unfortunately, that is common these days. But it's something completely different to falsely accuse actual people. As far as Katie's defense about being stressed out about the COVID-19 pandemic, this story doesn't fit with an attempted kidnapping claim. The virus may be homicidal, but it doesn't kidnap people. I guess one could argue that it indirectly kidnapped a lot of toilet paper, but that's an entirely different story. Considering that Katie traveled to a craft store, how stressed out could she have been about COVID-19? Moving to the next question, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Katie Sorensen had several beliefs that contributed to this incident. One, she bought into QAnon conspiracy theories about kidnappers running all over the place. Two, she had an intense interest in true crime podcasts. And three, she had a burning desire to be a social media influencer. She desperately wanted fame and fortune. Katie decided to combine all of her interests together. She used the conspiracy theories to drive the selection of attempted kidnapping as her topic. She used her experience with true crime content to fabricate what she thought would be a believable set of circumstances for this crime. And she used her social media influencer aspirations to promote the fake incident. When Katie went shopping at Michael's, she was looking for someone to falsely accuse. When she saw a Hispanic couple, she decided to target them, perhaps based on their race. Sherry Papini, another criminal known for making false statements, also claimed that Hispanic people had committed offenses against her. Maybe Katie obtained the idea from Sherry's story. After selecting the couple, Katie fabricated a story involving them and notified the police. She didn't worry about the surveillance cameras because Katie did not plan on anyone being arrested. I think that she just really wanted to play the victim. She craved for people to feel sorry for her and look up to her as a hero who was trying to protect her children. Her desperation was so pronounced, she wasn't worried about telling the truth. As she told the story repeatedly, she was unable to keep her own lies straight. She mentioned the allegation about attempting to grab the stroller. This changed everything. She graduated from fabricating an incident to fabricating a crime. Rather than distancing herself from the story when she had the opportunity, Katie doubled down on the nonsense. She was not about to give up all the attention that she was receiving. It was intoxicating, and she could not let it go. Katie was even willing to falsely testify against innocent people. She had completely given up on any illusion of dignity or integrity. Katie may have felt as though other people suffering for her lies was justified because she was a warrior against the evil conspirators all around the world. Another possibility is that Katie simply did not have any empathy. Katie wanted to be famous. I guess she will have to settle for notorious. Now moving to my final thoughts. What types of personality characteristics are common in people who are willing to commit a crime to play the victim? Here, I am not speaking about this particular case, rather in general. People who fabricate a victim status sometimes have vulnerable narcissism. They need admiration and have a sense of entitlement. They are self-centered, full of shame, insecure, resentful, emotionally reactive, impulsive, and seek attention. Often, they have failed to get attention for positive reasons, so they turn to negative reasons to satisfy that desire. Vulnerable narcissists can be extremely dangerous and impossible to satisfy. No amount of recognition is ever enough, which often contributes to false accusations being inflated over time. They will victimize anyone who gets in their way in order to play the victim.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Hey, hast du heute Nacht gut geschlafen? Und deine Haut auch? Stell dir vor, du erlebst den HK-Effekt. Deine Wäsche riecht einfach frisch, ganz ohne chemische Duftwolke. Und deine Haut atmet auf. Beim Putzen musst du nicht husten, sondern kannst einfach durchatmen. Das ist der Moment, in dem du spürst, sauber geht auch anders. Mit HK. Unbedenklich, hautfreundlich und dennoch wirksam. Probiere den HK-Effekt für Sauberkeit, die sich gut anfühlt. Jetzt entdecken auf hk.com.